Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
The Mean Team.
With guest co-hosts.
Neil.
Peace of Mind.
I will.
Okay then. Wait, you're not on the call. I guess I have to introduce it. I don't know.
Elmo wants to introduce it.
This is episode 81. My name is Neil, and with me we've got Daniel Quick.
Yes, you do.
Makalua.
Who are you people, and why do you keep waking me up so early on Saturday?
Imran Siddiqui.
Hi.
The Mean Team.
Running on 100% game fuel.
And peace of mind.
Howdy doody.
We talked about better ways we could be communicating with barbarians and an idea about dominant leader traits.
In the news, we discussed the new Civilization Network for Facebook, where people can play Civ on Facebook.
And in Forum Talk, we covered the wondrous event ideas thread and the potential for a leaderboard in multiplayer Civ.
Come on into the research lab, where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Communicating with the barbarians, this thread started by Hapsodyne. I think there should be some kind of option where the player can somehow communicate with barbarian villages, either to pay them to attack a city or area, to pay to have some sort of ceasefire, and paying can be in all forms, either by goods of gold or even knowledge and units, putting in mind that they can betray you if the other side pays more, quote-unquote. Of course, there could be more than one other side, depending upon how many other civs they've come in contact with. I'm going to cite Civilization Revolution here, which allows you to have contact with the barbarians, although it is limited. There really isn't a lot that's said that you can say to the barbarians. The barbarians just say that we enjoy living in filth and squalor, and we will take over your cities, and then when you capture one of their villages, sometimes you get gold. Sometimes you get a particular unit, not a unit that you killed, but you can get a great spy, for instance, which is a bit powerful, not suggesting that in Civ 4, but I do like the idea of just being able to talk to them, being able to contact the barbarians and say, hey, if we give you X amount of gold, then you will not attack us for X number of turns. You could say that there's then a chance that they'll turn around and betray you, but perhaps that could buy you some time, give you a little bit of benefit for having a little bit of gold in the bank. But I definitely don't think that communicating with barbarians should be as sophisticated as contacting another civilization on the planet.
Yeah, maybe make it to where if you move a scout, say, into a barbarian village, you can bring up like a little mini dialogue, kind of like an event box.
I do think it would be interesting. Maybe have this be something like that, or have the minor nations controlling the barbs to some extent. Because they already have that feature in the game, but outside of scenarios, you never see it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I don't like the thing about getting them to pay them to attack somebody else. Earlier episode, we had talked about mercenary army option. I would think of that as something separate from the barbarians themselves. But certainly to have them hold off from attacking you, and then if they didn't betray you, then maybe they then would go for somebody else nearby, so indirectly that could be to your benefit.
It's true, I have some visions, some bad visions of like high-level AI outbidding you consistently, and then you're just going to get dogpiled by the barbs under the current format, so it would have to be balanced if that were added.
And then maybe the barbs can bribe you to destroy that darn great wall.
Perhaps if on the first time you contacted the barbarians and you said it was going to cost 25 gold or something, maybe the next time it would have to go up in increments the amount of gold, they'd be like, oh yeah, well this time it's going to cost you blah.
Blackmailing for fun and profit.
Sounds good to me. I wish I could blackmail the AI earlier in the game. It's hard to come by gold before currency.
I mean, all the communication we've got right now, and it's really not communication is its...
Communication by pointy stick.
Infinite leader traits, this threat started by Conquest, which after My Wife Hates Civ might be one of the best Civ usernames I've ever seen. In a different form, someone asked how to write a mod to support a double-traited leader, you know, aggressive-aggressive, spiritual-spiritual. I'd like to see it another way, a dominant trait. Whichever trait is listed first confers additional benefits. Financial organized would be different from organized financial. This would double the possible combinations, and then he goes through those potential combinations. And I know one of our co-hosts on this episode responded to this individual.
These suggestions come up all the time, and how many have actually been tried? I'm curious. Making traits a lot stronger would change the game so much beyond what it is at the moment. Just looking at aggressive, for example, that's insane.
Oh, what, you have a problem with City Raider 3 Cavalry? I can't imagine why. But yeah, I don't know how many of these super traits have been tried in the mod, but yeah, a glance at these, even a quick one, although I've actually read through them. Some of them are just insanely strong. It's hard to picture them all working out to be relatively even, similar to the current traits. I know the current traits aren't perfect, but the disparity here is much increased.
Yeah, it seems like, if anything, it should be a minor kind of fun boost, whereas these are, if anything, even more powerful than the double-traded leader in a lot of ways.
Yeah, almost we really need only one of the dot points out of each of these traits for them to still be a lot stronger. Like, looking at the creative one, all government buildings, courthouses, jail security bureaus, and so on, get one culture. Like, even that is probably not enough to make it a super trait, but any more than that, you just push the game in one direction. You don't diversify strategies.
Come on, look at the point right below that. Improved worked tiles themselves produce culture. Like, how much culture? If you got a culture for each tile you work, you would flip cities really early. It's just saying you get monarchy and you're working 10 tiles. Getting 10 culture that soon. You can get that on more than one city in the BC era and really press. And if the AI had that, it'd be even worse.
For anybody who was playing aggressively, if you had either aggressive already mentioned or even imperialistic, rivals are 25% more likely to capitulate. The spy unit cost is reduced 50%. Attached great generals get free leadership promotion. Wow. Instead of having imperialistic, and aggressive, can I take your aggressive and imperialistic? Would that be all right?
Well, to be fair, it seems like for aggressive, for instance, all units start with combat 1 or all military units have access to all promotions. It seems to be an or list rather than an and list.
Oh, right.
In my case, it wouldn't necessarily be as bad, although I am very wary about opening up any promotion to a military unit because you can start putting things like commando on units that have 2 moves early in the game. Or amphibious, and the dynamic of the game changes completely.
Oh, come on. I want my City Raider machine guns.
Yeah, you have fun with that.
Amphibious Praetorians.
Nobody's mentioned financial here yet, but that one also looks really strong. If you're getting just base commerce, just for having pop, and it's +1 per 4 points, you start getting 3 or 4 extra commerce per city, you're starting to mimic the effects of the Great Lighthouse a little bit without doing anything or investing anything to wonder at all. Commodity trades in mass, too. It's like having a shrine. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, each trade which involves a commodity yields +1 gold per turn. I will trade my rice for your rice.
Yeah. God forbid you get a vassal and make a lot of garbage trades and you get like 80 gold a turn or something. Because vassals will sell you anything and even multiples of resources. And as it's written right now, you'd be able to take full advantage of that.
Even organized. Support cost of units outside borders is reduced by 50%. A code of laws add +1 to road movement? Wow.
It's not as strong as the others in my opinion, but it's definitely stronger than a normal trait.
May develop tiles but not work outside of cultural borders.
Yeah, that one threw me off a bit. What's the point of that?
All I can think of is I know sometimes if I'm thinking, here's City X, I want to settle City Y, there's going to be some overlap. It can be nice to send a worker to start working what will be that tile in City Y while I'm working on getting a settler. So that way when the city settled, it can start making use of that tile right away. So it's inside my cultural borders, but I don't know why you'd want to spend the effort of doing that if it's still outside of your culture of borders. Because if it's outside of your culture of borders, surely there is something you can be using your workers for closer to home.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess it's a minor boost, because early in the game you can improve those cows and stuff before your city gets a border pop, so it's ready instantly when you get a border pop, but it's not like a huge boost.
Speaking of huge boost, and maybe this is just because I like being on having end and not the receiving end, protective. All land units start with city garrison 1.
I would rather have drill, personally, because a city garrison, that's not going to be very helpful on, say, a maceman when you're attacking with it. Whereas if you have drill, it'll be good offense and defense.
Yeah, I guess he chose that because it was the protective trait, and he's thinking it would be being on the defense all the time.
Well, yeah, but the current protective trait gives their archery units drill. So just like you could do it with combat 1 with aggressive, you could have done that with a protective as well. Or give both, because otherwise this trait doesn't compare very well to the others.
Yeah, I'd certainly take aggressive over protective in that list.
Easily.
So it's just like real life.
Yeah, they made protective pretty bad in this trend, kind of like in current Civ, they kept the trend there.
To be fair, the city defenses cannot be reduced below 1% per population point is kind of neat.
Early in the game, like, seeing numbers like 1% and 2%, I think it's a pretty pointless change.
Well, philosophical cities can set great person bias by 50%, even if such a specialist is not available. So the example provided is a city running an artist specialist wanting a great engineer can select engineer and have a 50-50 chance of getting either. Whoa.
All right, let's play Egypt and run those early priests.
Yeah, you remember all those articles about managing your great people points? You can forget about those.
Yeah. Obsolete. And then you get each city gains plus one beaker for 4 population points, so plus 1 at 4, plus 2 at 8. And each city gains plus 1 great person point a turn. Okay.
Other than aggressive, that might be the strongest trait on this list. That's crazy.
As compared to charismatic. Historic negative modifiers are dropped, ignored, overlooked within 20 to 40 turns, so you declare war on us will eventually be dropped. You are at war with us will not. Rioting cities recover 100% faster. Garrison troops count double for controlling population.
That's cute, but its main point wouldn't work in multiplayer at all. This would be, like, a very nice trait in single player and, like, complete garbage in multiplayer. Because really all you'd be getting then is your rioting cities recovering a little bit faster, for the most part. That's not a serious issue in multiplayer compared to other things. And your human players aren't going to forget that you declared war on them. If you could make it do that, that would be interesting. But yeah, if you want a Diplo in the game, that trait would let you win a Diplo victory every single game, pretty much. Because you could just negate any negative modifier and get up to plus 8 really easily.
Spiritual. Religions spread 100% faster. Up to 2 external religions will spread naturally to cities. Up to 3 internal religions will spread naturally to cities. The missionary unit cost is reduced 50%. Missionary missions are 100% more successful.
If a city has a religion, auto-spread will never happen there. The only missionaries will add additional religions to a city. So that's an interesting dynamic. I don't know if I'd want to sacrifice the other things the trait can get for it. But someone playing for culture would love this trait. Just love it. Because the cathedrals are such an integral part, and that not only are the missionaries more successful when they spread, but they're half-cost, too.
What does 100% more successful mean? The missionaries?
As far as I could tell, they're either twice as successful or they never fail. I don't know.
Expansionist. Oh, I gotta jump to the third point. At calendar, each city tile produces plus 1 food. At biology, each city tile produces plus 1 food on top of the plus 1 food you already get at biology. It doesn't say every tile, every city tile, but still.
Some good city tiles.
I'm a bit more impressed by the ability to farm desert.
Yeah.
On the Earth map, suddenly being the Mali isn't so bad.
Except for they're not expansive.
I have to admit, worker fortified in a city adds plus 2 health.
What?
That's interesting. I'd never heard of that.
Oh, I got it. They have somebody to shovel all the poo.
You think of it in the later game, you know, once you've worked all of the tiles you can work and before they can be building railroad, there is that period where I've got my workers in. They're just sitting in the cities, just waiting to improve the trade network when railroad comes about. But by the time you'd be at that point where you'd have all these workers and maybe even want the workers rather than roaming around, you've got the opportunity to have connected a number of resources for health and building your granaries and aqueducts, so I'm not sure how beneficial that really is.
See, I'm going the other way from that for me a little bit. Now, it's not like a super powerful thing to have, but I can think of two instances where this is going to be really nice. The first is when you're maxing out your cities using hereditary rule. This can give a city that's low in health quite a number of boosts. And ultimately, you put two workers in there, you're getting +4 food if the city's over its health cap. And the other one is right after you get assembly line and start building those factories and coal plants everywhere, and you get something like +9 on health, I think it is. That's pretty bad. The only thing I can really mitigate that with consistently, because you don't have access to ecology right away and, you know, all the health buildings, is to run environmentalism. You have to set up your empire pretty well in terms of tile improvements to actually make decent use of environmentalism. So having something like this where you could tolerate the unhealth right away is pretty helpful.
Now, there is one problem with the worker feature. Workers can't fortify.
Whoops.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They only sleep, huh?
So they add 2 health while they're sleeping.
Oh, I'm sure that's what he meant. They're trying to trick us or something.
I like that technicality.
Why aren't they getting health? Because he's not fortified.
The thing with calendar, each city is getting 1 food. I think I can see city spam working a lot better with that. Mass slavery, tons of cities, run small city sizes.
Yeah, by the end of the game, you're going to have almost an extra resource for the city in terms of food. But even a calendar, you're already starting to get a pretty solid benefit. We were discussing the, like, I think it wasn't Draconian, but it was one of the traits in the last polycast. It was the same thing, where I would have happily taken a trait that gives you an extra food in the city tile from the start of the game.
So, yeah, overall, that suggestion for expansion is not too bad, I don't think, on the whole, compared to some of the others, anyway.
Yeah, like any other list, there's a lot of good suggestions in here. It would just be a nightmare to balance. Some of them are more geared for single player, and some of them are very strong in either format, and that would have to be adjusted as well. And ultimately, it's like a lot of the other things we see, where there's a lot of good ideas. It would just be difficult to implement them correctly into the game and still maintain balance.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd like this more than what we already have right now, even if it could be balanced.
I just want to know how jails add +1 culture.
If they can add happiness, why not culture?
I think, as we've said before, you end up with, as you said in the thread there, peace of mind, a super trait. I guess it makes it easier to decide, in a way, how you're going to play the game out, because you're going to play to the strengths of it, but I prefer the balance of having the 2 different traits, and whether one is listed first or second doesn't particularly matter.
I think, yeah, making traits more powerful is sort of the wrong way to go. I just don't think it's been thought through too much. From the start of the game, you just be like, oh, this is what I'm going to do.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community. Some dude named Sid Meier started writing these posts saying that they're going to start a what's called the Sid Meier Civilization Network on Facebook. And basically, I guess it'll allow people eventually, when they get out of beta testing, to play Civ over Facebook. I guess it's going to be somewhat better than Mafia Wars and Yeovil and all the other stuff on Facebook. So, basically, I guess right now they're looking for beta testers and getting fans and whatnot. And right as of this second, was 11:31 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Halloween 2009, there are 38,375 fans.
That was fast.
Yeah, I think there was like 10,000 after 2 days or something.
There's a general description that Sid provides. You can coordinate strategy to win great battles, share your technology to jump ahead of your rivals. So far, you know, that's standard stuff. Lobby your family and friends to form your own government and win vital elections. Manage and grow your cities to maximize production and happiness. Spy on your enemies and work with your friends to create the great wonders of the world. Some people have already cited about the lobby your family and friends as resulting in many friend spam requests.
Like other Facebook games.
People worrying that more friends equals you'll have a better civilization and then everybody else is turned off and screwed. A bad thing about this is that the short form of this wants to be CivNet, but that was already done with the expansion to Civ 1, which was actually called CivNet. But there is something good about this. It's not on MySpace.
And they even have a Twitter feed, twitter.com/civnetwork, which is basically, I guess, saying what they're doing on Facebook. What's that?
The Twitter thing? Jeez. I'm just trying to come to grips with the Facebook thing.
Yeah, I'm a proud non-Twitter user, so...
Apparently Dan is still stuck in 1995.
just because it's newer doesn't mean that it's better. My first reaction to this was quite negative, but I think it's in the similar lines to Civilization Revolution, which is that the idea that we are broadening the scope of appeal, that is, the Civilization franchise, because as some people have pointed out in the threads on Appleton and Civ Fanatics and We Play Civ and other forums online that just aren't for Civ fan sites, that this will get more people who would not consider playing Civilization otherwise to get into the fold, and it will increase the interest in it and the spread, and perhaps, if and when a Civilization 5 came out or any other title, it would increase interest in the franchise in general. Civilization Network, it does not appeal to me. I do not have a Facebook account, and even though this is Civ, it's not enough for me to get a Facebook account. At least what we know about the details right now are pretty general, so just the fact that Civilization will be on Facebook is not in and of itself enough. Just like the fact that Civilization was coming out on the console was not in and of itself enough. I needed to see the game actually in practice and the game being discussed and getting some more specifics before I decided, yeah, that this is something that I want to have.
I still haven't decided to get Super. I probably won't.
Yeah, I don't have it.
I've got it on the Nintendo DS, and that allows me to play Civ a way that I can't play Civilization 4, which is on the go without having to carry on a laptop with me, which I don't own, which would be a greater investment on top of it financially. But the thing is, Civilization Network doesn't fit that space. Like, where can I fit in Civ where I don't already have it? I guess you can access Facebook from your BlackBerry or your cell phones or whatever that way, but I don't have a cell phone that has that capability. It doesn't appeal to me. There isn't a spot where in my life I would like to have Civ where I currently don't. I think anybody who's super giddy and excited about it, that's great. I just hope you're not setting yourself up for a disappointment because you've made your expectations too high. Just like anybody who's right now is saying suck or fail, look at it from the greater perspective like I have. Bad for me, but good for the series, which indirectly then becomes better for me because then perhaps a Civilization 5 can see the light of day.
I do find it a little interesting that reactionary argument is calling for new blood.
Yeah, me too. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I like Dan's soliloquy earlier, where it's like, I don't have a phone like that, and I don't have social networking. I'm like, you're just reiterating my point that you're still stuck in 95, aren't you?
Like I said, just because it's new doesn't mean it's better. And for me, Facebook doesn't offer anything to me that is of interest, so...
Come on, Dan, even my mom's on Facebook. Just do it.
Civilization Network will be free to play. You know, although, according to the Gamma Sutra article, Meyer did not reveal any monetization methods, which may or may not include virtual item buys and advertising.
Well, there'll probably be ads.
Yeah, I don't worry so much about ads as virtual item buys, depending upon how that's implemented.
Yeah. Having seen the way some of the other Facebook games work, I really don't like the microtransactions they have in those. Because it lets somebody sit there and spend like $20 and then they're like, this much ahead of you. And that's not in the spirit of Civ.
I'd spend a couple bucks for some mechanized infantry units in 2000 BC.
I think for optimism, though, that the turn-based nature of Civ is well-suited to social networking sites like Facebook is a positive. Deliver it in a different method, like consoles and now on a social networking site. As was said, that's a way to get new people to play it. Let's go to where they are and give them an option with where they're already established. As I said, that makes sense to me. But since I'm not there, it's not something that is of interest to me.
And you know what the other bonus is? Then you can finally say, Polycast, every regular co-host plays Civ.
You are committing yourself right now to playing Civilization Network. Is that what you're saying?
Hey, yeah, it won't take that much time.
I think it's going to be so different to the Civ games we have at the moment. It's almost typical of Firaxis, actually, to tag Civilization onto any new product you have. Like, colonization is really not Civilization. The number of people who come up saying, oh, do I need civilization forward to install colonization. This is going to be very, very different. I mean, there's so many things they're going to have to be careful about. How are they going to prevent griefing, for example? Like, are you actually going to be able to attack people?
Oh, yes. Why wouldn't you?
That's pretty cool to Civ.
I think that a lot of people who don't play Civ anymore will say, hey, you know, this is like a little Facebook game that, you know, whenever I log on, I can make like a move or something and I can just play it like that. And it's easy, won't take up too much of my time.
Good. How many people is that? People who play Civ and don't play anymore.
Exactly, but I mean, there's a lot of those.
Opinions are definite all over the place and understandably so.
Well, I'd like to see a mock-up of what it's going to look like, though.
There's going to be a beta test, but it's going to be a closed beta test.
Yes, but at least they could show a screenshot of what they have now.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if, because it's going to be a closed beta test and they're asking people to get ready for that, they haven't said when that's going to start, how many people they're going to take, what the criteria is going to be. Either they're not that close to the beta test yet to opening it up because they want people to get some more information and see what it looks like and have a look at the interface and the graphics, or because it's a closed beta, they're not actually going to disclose any of that, and they want people who are just interested by the nature of the description. That those are the kind of people that they want to join, regardless of how it's currently looking or playing right now.
The interesting thing is, and I just saw this as I was clicking around in the Facebook friend page of it, an article on Joystick mentions that Brian Reynolds is now the chief designer at the social gaming developer Zynga.
Yes, this is true.
They found it interesting that both of the Reynolds and Meyer are getting into social gaming, maybe to expand their brand a little.
I think the big thing to remember about this is that a lot of the us and a lot of the comments that we're seeing on it are all from kind of the old Civ diehards. And I don't know that we're really the target of this Facebook Civ.
I don't think so. If you happen to overlap, that's one thing. That's a positive coincidence, I'm sure, as far as they're concerned. But yeah, it's just like with Civilization Revolution.
I think their target is really almost solely the Facebook crowd. Like, it's a young group of people, probably their target sort of audience, target age group, people who have time to play games even.
And I mean, if you remember, Sid has said constantly that he's very interested in massive multiplayer type of things, and it's not like Sid is the lead designer on whatever Civ game is going to be coming out installed on the PC. Sid likes doing his own little thing.
Yeah, what does he actually do now?
Like Civ Rev, it's the thing that a lot of hardcore Civ players were like, what? What the hell are you doing? It seems like Sid just wants to do what he wants to do, and like people want Civ 5, like, well, he'll just pass it on to other designers and just say, hey, you guys do the next version of that. I'm just going to be the creative director. You just can bounce ideas off me, and I'll help you out, but I want to do things that I want to do. I read a comment where the guy was saying, well, perhaps this is a precursor, and they're going to see how this works in order to go on to the ultimate goal that Sid seems to have, is have an MMO Civ game.
And anybody who is claiming that, oh, well, there's not going to be Civ 5, there's no more Civ on the PC, this is what Civ 5 is. Remember, that was some of what people said about Civilization Revolution, because, oh, now Civ is on the console. Well, it's not just on the console, there's now Civilization Network, and it's going to be on the social networking site Facebook.
I think those people don't really realize how hands-off Sid was on Civ 4. Soren Johnson was doing Civ 4.
If there's money to be had, they'll make the games. Pretty simple.
It amuses me, all the people who are like, oh my god, this is horrible. Like, if you don't want to play it, don't play it.
So should we speculate on when we'll see this Civ Network?
I believe it was said next year it's going to be released, 2010. So this is the fall of 2009. Start taking predictions for 2010. When in 2010?
I'm guessing October.
I'm going to go with July.
Well, those are the two most reasonable predictions. I'll say second quarter. No, third quarter. 2010. There you go. Third quarter.
Oh, sure. You're taking a whole quarter. Imran and I here are picking a month. Come on now.
Hey. What do they usually say when they're going to release a game? They say which quarter they're probably going to release it.
Yeah, but this is a Facebook game.
Imran and I are going out on a limb by restricting ourselves to a 30-day period.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happens when you go out on limbs.
Depends on which limb.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
Oh, while Philip puts his microphone on mute while he rants, the rest of us talk about...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Event ideas thread. Started by Voltage, and I have to say that some of them I was turned off simply because they chose a particular civilization to use in the event, like they actually named it. Now, I suppose if you could say that that was variable, like rather than putting in India, for example, or France or China, you could have in square brackets, like actually put a particular civilization so that it wasn't always specifically tied to that civilization, because it seemed like that they were trying to have some sort of historical basis or historical reasoning for assigning that particular event to them. So any one of those I saw, I just ignored them. I wasn't interested for that reason, but I mean, that's an old personal bias.
I thought that they would be doing that just as an example to show where the event came from, but that it wouldn't necessarily tie to that civ in the civ game.
Yeah.
So that's the way I interpreted it. There just has to be a swine flu one, doesn't there? It's a good example of why I hate events so much. -2 pop in every city. I mean, come on. How many millions of people would you be killing off due to swine flu as a result of that? Or, like, the quarantine. Yeah, that's not as bad. But if you have to pay money to do it, you could be screwed, depending on when this happens to you.
I was the one in the third post by Blin Fui or something. He got warned for flaming.
Oh, yeah.
I like our pilots gained vital experience in the war. Get those pilots better equipment, fund the pilots to make a flying school, show this to the world, get these guys in aircraft shows, where you either had some upgrades and promotions, or a diplomatic improvement, or a happiness improvement in all your cities. I like that event. I guess because I just like to see more promotion availability, period, for air units.
That seems like it should be the result of a build this many planes quest.
I suppose it would be better as a quest, yeah.
The other thing, most of these events are hard to sort of imagine, I guess, without knowing how frequent they'll be or how likely they are. Someone made that comment near the end of the thread, I think. Should some of these events only appear every 10% of games or so?
If you have events, I would rather see them balanced, that they can appear in the game consistently and they don't have, like, ridiculously game-changing effects. And some of them are pretty tolerable to even nice, like, for example, 7. You capture an enemy military scientist, and you get your choice of... whatever.
I think the novelty wears off. When Beyond the Sword first came out, like, all the events are like, ooh.
I don't know if you want a regular game feature to have its selling point be its novelty. I mean, these things, yeah, at least when I first saw events in Beyond the Sword, I pictured them as a dynamic in the game that your actions affect them. And to an extent, that's true if you know the random event code well enough. But some of the ones that are just so overpowering... or so damaging, they're really a turnoff to playing a certain way.
Anyway, I think the best post in the thread is Lemons number 37.
Oh, God. I haven't even read the rest of it, just the healthcare in the first line, and you already know.
I didn't even have to get there, and you said healthcare, and I already know what this is going to be.
Stuff flame wars are made of.
The number 40 is kind of fun.
Yeah. You lose.
The single option. Darn.
An ancestor of a human has been uncovered in the Ice Mountains. It supports Darwin's theory. Burn it, +1, with all religious leaders. Study the corpse, find out where we came from, +1 science in all universities. Plus the number 17. Oh no, a scandal is about to hit the papers. Our politicians have been using government funds for personal gains. Let the story run, +1 gold from all broadcast towers, -1 happiness for 5 turns. Do not doubt us, convert immediately to state property. Like, the first option was like, convert immediately to state property. Whoa. I mean, you could just say, well, as soon as I can switch back, I'm out of it again.
Well, yeah, but negative one happiness for 5 turns isn't that bad either. Especially since you're getting gold per turn for it if you have broadcast towers.
Yeah, so it's really kind of like...
It's kind of a joke event. I wouldn't mind getting it, but...
I really like number 6, actually. The offer of a mutual training program for military units.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
The only kind of problem I can see with that is, like, if the French are your ally or even your vassal, then there's no reason not to. It would be neat if it specifically targeted ones that you're annoyed or worse with.
I don't know, it makes sense that a friendly civ would do that, more so than someone who hates you. Like, it probably wouldn't be encouraged when Russia with the USSR, well, all those countries were, to, like, do a joint military training program with them, as opposed to, say, England.
That's fair.
Mutual military training assumes that you're not going to be attacking each other when you're done with it.
I'm just saying from a game balance perspective, to make it a real dilemma, which choice to go with.
Oh, well, there's no dilemma at all. I mean, if it's between you and the AI, you take the promotion. You can use it a lot better than AI can. AI barely builds tanks or doesn't know what it's doing when it does. Now, one thing I see in all these event suggestions, and they never have a very important element of them, and that is the prerequisites and weights. We touched on the weights earlier, but really, what's the likelihood of each of these things to happen? And what do you need to have unlocked in order to get it? Like, can you get access to Joe 1 tanks before you can even build tanks? Because one person might have industrialism, the other one not. When can swine flu hit you? You know, when are you going to have the option of converting to state property or having your broadcast towers boosted? And I would love to convert to state property in, like, 2000 BC, for example. But, you know, obviously it wouldn't do that. But then where would you make if it's an event viable? Like, all these things have to be thought out.
The other thing is, a lot of them are a fairly clear choice. Like, there's not really much. It's not an interesting decision. It's one of the whole points of Civ, or one of the design goals or whatever, that it's a series of interesting decisions. I think Maya said that. Just looking at the first event, what are they? Declare war, -3, diplo.
Yeah.
Destroy the mines. Like, that's pretty pointless. Who cares? So it's pretty much just -3, -2, or -1. I don't think the decision is very interesting.
No.
Some of them are very good, though. Like the pilot one, the French offering the training, I think that's a bit more interesting.
The rare events that can just end the game. Those are the ones that are really shouldn't be in the game. If you prep for every single event that's like that, then you're cutting into your play so much. They're rare enough that the optimal decision doesn't change, but then if they happen, you're screwed. Fortunately, most of the event suggestions on this list do not result in game over or an unbreakable lead or something like that. And I don't have a problem with events like that. They're not a reason to turn the option off.
Leaderboard for multiplayer, started by Thoughtful Thug. For the upcoming Civ game, maybe Part 5, should there be a leaderboard where players can compete for bragging rights? To me, I'm tired of the ladder league and would love to have a legitimate leaderboard where all players can see their statistics and others as well, quote-unquote. And I guess by legitimate, you mean official, like from Firaxis and 2K. Well, they did do that for Civilization Revolution. Now, it would end up being, should end up being, a little bit different for a Civ 5, for example. And I think it's one of those things where if you want to participate in it, great. If not, you can ignore it. So I think that would be a win-win. Again, for those people who want it, it's there. For those people who don't, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see the arguments against it. It's just a feature that you don't have to use, really.
But generally, the arguments against any feature are usually how much time is going to be spent maintaining and developing that feature as opposed to the game.
I suppose. This is fairly standard for any online multiplayer game these days, though. It's not, like, groundbreaking. I can't remember the last time a relatively recent game that was intended for a lot of online multiplayer didn't have at least some form of this feature. Now, some implement it better than others, but they still do it.
Most people who play Civ 4, or most of the other Civs, maybe not Revolution, play it in single player and barely touch multiplayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it is pretty much a single-player experience. And there is also the fact, if you go into the GameSky lobby and you can't stand all the childish sort of chat that goes on, it doesn't absorb you like the single-player game does necessarily.
Well, that much is true. You have a lot of people quitting earlier, doing random things, or playing worse than Noble AIs, and then some people who are way better. So it can be pretty erratic, but it can be fun sometimes.
I personally wouldn't see much value in a leaderboard, but as with most things, like, it's indifferent. Did it work well for CivRev, having a leaderboard? I mean, it does, right?
I really haven't played a lot of CivRev. Can anyone else comment on that? I should say I haven't played any.
For CivRev, I think it's still ongoing, though even though I don't think there's anything negative in this, you could make the reasonable argument that the community is already doing that, such as the Ladder League. I don't know. You could have it so that the tools are there during the development, and so that it's somehow incorporated into the game or outlined in the game, but then in terms of maintaining it, you would turn it to the community. Or you could just say from the outset, we're not going to try to reinvent the wheel, or there are people who are willing to step forward to help manage this. Because I guess the biggest thing would be, after the game's release, are you going to continue having one or more paid employees manage this? And if yes, then how much time are they going to be spending doing that, and what kind of return are you getting for that? I mean, we've already touched upon that as a downside to it. And but just because there's an official leaderboard doesn't mean that there can't be other leaderboards. Today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Shoreline will create irregular continents and tiny islands in certain regions. A pressed shoreline will create more compact continents and likely also a few tiny islands in. And a solid shoreline will create very compact continents without islands, save rarely one or two larger ones. I guess I just had it as more of how it would look on screen, not that it actually had an impact on actual gameplay.
I think there's a fair few map scripts where it doesn't matter anyway.
Well, some map scripts don't let you choose it, so yeah, but some it doesn't matter.
Thank you for listening to episode 81 of Polycast. I'm Dan Q, and I've been joined by our first-time guest co-host, Peace of Mind.
Oh, I'm going to say something.
Here's where you say something fun.
Peace out.
Returning guest co-host, Neil.
It's been fun.
Fellow regular co-host, Imran Siddiqui.
Where am I? Who are you people?
The main team.
When you get the swine flu event, think of me.
And
Mackie.
It's nap time now.
It's not just American Halloween, but stop trying to own the world.
I don't know what you Canadians do. Dan dresses up as Sid Meier as he plays his game.
I don't just wait for Halloween to do that.
I'm actually giving you the look of death, which is an epic fail on an audio podcast, but still.
I will say that. Whoa. I can hear myself. I can hear myself, but not in stereo.
Oh, there we go.
And we also found out that Dan is an 80-year-old man.
You whippersnappers! You and your Facebook!
And where I established that newer does not necessarily mean better.
Heck, in my day we talked in IRC!
In my day we waited for the modem to connect to the internet.
Yep. Noise is drilled into my head.
Unfortunately, I'm not too young for that.
Oh, I'm not too young for that. I'm just making fun of Dan.
That's your other account, right, Dan?
I was just going to say, like, and these are the people that other geeks make fun of, but... But then he said, is that your other account, Dan? I'm like, oh, well. Dan's not that bad yet.
Keyword, yet.
100% of all web celebrities have one thing in common. Podcasts.
Your celebrity figure.
Well, I am. One I'm a podcast co-host.
Record date October 31st, 2009. Web Zero's clip copyright Smooth View Films. Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright 2009, Civilized Communication at civcom.net.